Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Let's return to the Mitchell Park Domes in Milwaukee for the second part of our forum on race relations. The audience of around 150 was divided up among tables at the domes. Each table spent a half an hour discussing three key questions: whether racial harmony exists in Milwaukee, what's working for or against it, and who has the responsibility for improving racial harmony. Each table was then asked to assign one representative to report on its discussion. WUWM's Bob Bach moderated that part of our conversation.
We'll move on now to Stephen Hunter.
Sure. We basically answered that there was no racial harmony in Milwaukee, but there was a lot of racial tolerance. That when we, like Latoya's group said, when we're in identified goal-based groups, then, yeah, those people are engaged in racial harmony. But outside of that, in spontaneous random actions, no racial harmony. So it's nothing working in its favor. The biggest barrier, we said, was fear. We kind of whittled it down to people's basic fear of challenging their own personal beliefs, because you see that people are willing to remain in positions of status quo, and no one's asking themselves, well, why do I act on these beliefs, and why do I believe what I believe? What information or reasons do I have for these actions? Who has the responsibility to improve racial harmony? We said that each individual has responsibility to it. We also said that those in power have more access to that, pushing those agendas. And one comment came up that like to see more people who voted for President Obama to actually step outside of the voting booth and do something more random, more spontaneous that promotes racial harmony.
Very good. Thank you, Stephen. Yvette, would you like to go next?
Sure.
This is Yvette Mitchell.
Hi, I'm representing Table 19, and we had Ran, Beth, Mary, Linda, and Lori. When we addressed the question, is there racial harmony in Milwaukee, we really also came up to the idea that there wasn't necessarily agreement about what racial harmony was, but we felt like we were more at a level of tolerance, and tolerance was more of a word that we felt we could actually begin to work with. And in that sense, three people felt that racial tolerance had actually improved since they were younger to where we are today. So like from a generational standpoint, intergenerationally, we had a lot of dialogue about how things show up differently for them as individuals versus their children or other people that they see in younger generations. And there were three people who were in agreement that there was no racial tolerance really happening, let alone harmony, that there was a lot of dissonance happening. As conversations begin to happen, there seemed to be more breakdowns and more volatility occurring in the conversations. And also a fear that people have in terms of even being able to address each other about this idea or concept of race. What's working in its favor and what are some of the barriers? There were some ideas just kind of thrown out in terms of if we looked at what it was like when people were younger to where they are today, some of the things that they felt really helped improve racial tolerance was some of movement in economic equality, that there's more exposure and there's more opportunity for people to have exposure with one another than there was when they were younger. And I'm talking like the 60s to now. And then the idea of dialogue, that there seemed to be more youth involved in these conversations and more interracial dynamics happening among younger ages. And so in that sense, there seems to be some idea that there's some connections and relationships being built. And then also that there are more opportunities for people to actually engage and talk together in terms of them working together just in social dynamics and on jobs and specifically. Barriers, three things that were thrown out were economics, education, and wealth disparity, which has been a systemic issue for a long time. There was also agreement and noddings of the head when we heard people talk about media and white privilege as key barriers to actually having people have racial tolerance versus racial harmony. Let's see. Who has the responsibility to improve racial harmony? Our group really felt like everyone in their own way has some way of impacting racial harmony, and that really is about us individually being real about who we are and being willing to risk bringing that forth. And at this time, even though things are more volatile and there's a lot of tension and energy, even though Obama said talk about race, there's still some hesitancy to actually engage deeply in that dialogue. and that being able to leverage that power to actually improve something tangibly is really the biggest challenge that we're running into. And that ultimately, to really address this issue, we are really in a space where we're collectively at a place where we're breathing oppressive air, we're, you know, drinking oppressive water, eating oppressive food, and we have to figure out how we can begin to tune into where we are and leverage whatever power we have, whatever moment we have, to actually stretch ourselves beyond where we have been.
Thank you, Yvette. Mary DeNoble, please.
Hello, everyone. The gift of coming at this time is that there's been such incredible wisdom shared already. Our group talked about practically everything that's been mentioned so far. And if I had to highlight something, and I really appreciated the opportunity with the group that I sat with, to start to have a deeper dialogue. You know, when we talked about harmony, we said there may be levels of friendliness, but they lack a depth. And I think some of our conversations can be deeper to really explore differences and the blessings that differences bring. We did then right go to barriers like everyone else, and the economic, educational, health barriers, all of them. But I think we need deeper conversations about those. We talked a lot about the city of Milwaukee, the barriers between the suburbs and the city, the government, you know, the agencies that control the wealth, private, public, not-for-profit, for-profit, all of them. So I think where we netted out was that we thought the conversations should continue and that we should try to focus more on some of the positive things that are happening because those things don't make the paper. Some of the things that are happening within diverse neighborhoods don't always come to the fore. So we actually liked talking about some of the neighborhoods we live in and some of the things that are happening. So I think we should report on progress and focus more on the movement toward becoming a more diverse and accepting community.
Thank you, Mary. Tracy Golden.
As Mary just mentioned, the benefit of coming this late in the program is that everything's already been discussed. But what I'd like to highlight is the group in general. Sitting at my table was like sitting with the UN. We have people from different countries, a gentleman from Nigeria, a gentleman from Greece, people who've moved here recently from other parts of the United States, someone from northern Wisconsin, someone from Chicago, a lovely Latina woman who believes that Milwaukee is very segregated and who loves the fact that she lives and works in a community of people who look just like she does, who worship like she does. So I think we had a very impassioned discussion about the pros and cons of having community, and then when does having community turn into making a racial divide? So I think that just having that opportunity to come to the table together with such a diverse group of people gives us an opportunity to all take responsibility for changing things in the way that we want them to be now and not holding on to the past fears and old stereotypes, to take the risk of doing something differently and changing our outcomes.
Thank you, Tracy. Gina, I see you standing. Would you like to come forward? This is Gina Green-Harris.
Hi, good afternoon or evening. We actually talked a little bit about pretty much what everyone has said we have said, but when we looked at is there a racial harmony in Milwaukee, we kind of talked about racial harmony in layers. And what we said is pretty much that in personal layers and in personal relationships, yes, we can actually find some racial harmonies because at that point we are choosing people in whom we have relationships with. So if I'm talking about my best friend or if I'm talking about my neighbor next door, then sure, we can have levels of racial harmony. But when we're talking about in more of the regional levels of racial harmony, absolutely, we begin to lose racial harmony. But what we then develop is tolerance, and we begin to tolerate relationships. And so
even as we continue to go on in the macro level, then I think one of the terms we use is that we actually tolerate, or sometimes we even will go so far as just to allow for certain types of what seems like racial harmony. Now we're talking about on our jobs and all of those kinds of things where we have to go ahead and we have to say we can work together to get things done for the common purpose. But that really doesn't mean we actually have racial harmony. So we talked about it in that respect. And one of the young ladies at our table, which was interesting, actually talked about, she's a younger student, she's a master's level student, but she talked about the fact that she's grown up in communities of non-color. So she was able to go to UW. She was able to basically come into some of the larger systems and be able to swim. And so, unfortunately, that didn't mean she had racial harmony, though. It meant she learned tolerance, and it meant she learned how to maneuver and work through systems, which is what a lot of us have learned to do. So does that equal racial harmony? And we would answer the question, no, it doesn't. So what is the biggest barrier? And we actually talked about quite a few barriers that have been named here today already. But really, we talked about structural barriers as well. And we know that we have governmental structures. We know that we actually have just structures in terms of where we live, the education structures. So we talked about those as well. And then I'm going to be brief because I know my time is up. But who has the responsibility to improve racial harmony? And I think the answer has been what we said, all of us. But I think it goes beyond us having a conversation. I really believe, and I think my table would agree with me, is that we have to recognize that if we're in positions of power, if we're in positions of authority, we are called change agents, and we have to be willing to take the risk to actually begin to challenge the systems that we know that are in place that are not promoting racial harmony, that are not promoting things that we know would benefit our community. So that's our table. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you, Gina. Omar?
Okay. Am I the last one?
No, we have
good.
Andrew Simons still to go.
Practically, we have said what a lot of other people have said already. But we went over and each one of us gave our opinions about racial harmony and what is racial harmony for all of us and what actually harmony really means. And then, you know, differences of opinion, but most likely most of us said that just getting along, you know. I mean, there is racial disharmony here in Milwaukee because I mentioned to them that myself coming from another country, Nicaragua, about 22 years ago, I still drive down to the north side and still see the same things that I've seen 20 years ago. The same thing happened in the south side. Nothing has really changed, at least to the extent that we would like it to have changed here in the city of Milwaukee. I mean, and that's what we call ourselves our segregated city, because we have the Latinos in the south side, the north sides are the blacks, or African Americans. The biggest barrier, education was one that we actually talked about, but also we tied it to many other things. But one of the biggest things that we said about education is that when we talk about education, we always talk about that the disparity of teachers, some of you mentioned too, and also that the minorities, we do have a high rate of dropouts. You know, we don't graduate. And that's because the education system is not working. And when we talk about that, at some point, we have our priorities in the city of Milwaukee upside down, because we rightfully can say that it's okay to have a minority spend over a year in jail for $45,000 approximately. But when we talk about spending money in education and we put it in the ballot, most people in the city of Milwaukee would say no, and that has been done before, because that would raise too much taxes and that would be so bad for the city. But then again, we can happily or not happily don't mind about having someone in jail for a year for about $45,000. What the responsibility that we have, well, is what everybody has said. Each and every one of us has a responsibility, and we as communities, we have to start taking matters into our hands by doing these kind of things, but not just talking about it like Dr. Fuller said, you know, once a year we come over and then we talk about it, and then we'll wait until next year. We have to start doing something about it, and that is by electing our people, electing the people what we think that they're going to be doing the issues that we think that are important to us. And for this matter would be, you know, electing officials that are going to be doing the stuff that we as community want them to do. I mean, that's, I think, that's about it. I hope that summarized it well. So.
Thank you, Omar. One more speaker from our tables tonight. And if I've forgotten someone, please let me know. This is kind of informal. We'll just take care of that. Otherwise, I think Andrew Simons is our final speaker.
Good evening. Representing table 18. Our dialogue was everywhere. And I think what's good is that we're learning to start somewhere. I feel that the barriers to the past were that dialogue was not opening, which it is today. And for that reason, citizens are evolving. Certainly, education is a key to the future. And to uncover the past so that we can understand that future and to meet children where they are at, that generations of choices has made Milwaukee what it is today, that social norms have been compounded to a situation that creates the Milwaukee that we see every day. And so it's a hope that we begin to create a dialogue of racial reconciliation with one another, and that we continually move forward in a positive direction. Public Allies has allowed me to help me understand and empower myself that in order to do that, Milwaukee's beginning to change the face of leadership, and that everyone is a leader, and it's important that we serve Milwaukee. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you all. That was very impressive. Wow. That was something. Very thought-provoking and heartfelt commentary. Thank you. And thanks to all the volunteers that stepped forward to summarize what was discussed at their tables.
You're listening to a special Project Milwaukee edition of Lake Effect, coverage of the Forum on Race Relations that took place on Wednesday evening at the Mitchell Park Domes. We'll be back with the final part of that forum in just a moment on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.